Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Definitely, it's von Mises Institute. It's my first love in the United States, and the most I would say the institute is making such a great difference in thinking and of young people using fantastic resources on the website of the institute as well. Yes, I was listening to my kind of bizarre biography. I lived in Moscow. And at the end of my career there, I worked as one of economic advisors to Soviet government. I wasn't the advisor. I wouldn't take the blame for what happened over there. Can you imagine? 11 time zones, 1/6 of the world's surface, failed miserably, was destroyed by ideas of this person. So when we wrote this book, Requiem for Marx, it's kind of a little bit premature in the sense that today his ideas are still reigning supreme in many capitals of the world, and it looks like in Washington, D.C. as well. So the Marxism, there's a very sad Russian saying that the only lesson of history is that it does not teach us anything. And it definitely what is Marxism and why I am referring to socialism? Because what if we will look at it, because that's a lot of confusion, for example, among my students. What is socialism? What is communism? And many socialists are presenting the case like socialism is pretty good. It's communism which is bad. It's communism which made so many errors in the book of human history. Karl Marx himself, he was a German philosopher. However, we don't know, interestingly enough, that even in Soviet Union, some of his writings were considered to be so horrific that they were kept under lid. They were classified. They were in archives. There is another wonderful movie. I think Silver Circle is must to see. But there is another movie I would recommend you strongly called Soviet Story. Soviet Story. It's the best inoculation against socialism, the Soviet story. You can either watch it on the internet or buy a DVD. And they recovered some of these archives. And Marx, in 1848, writing in Neue Rheinische Zeitung, that's a newspaper he edited, he's writing that in Europe we have a lot of racial trash. He was the one who came up with this term first. And by racial trash in Europe, he believed that racial trash would be Scottish Islanders, would be Basques, would be Serbs, and other Slavs, And these people are so backward that they should be burned, as he wrote, in a fire of the revolutionary Holocaust. So Marx came up with two ideas, one socialism and another communism. However, communism is a utopia which, according to Marx, would occur only 400 or 500 years from now. So socialism is exactly what was happening in Soviet Union, in People's Republic of China, in Cuba, in North Korea, in other oppressed countries. So the major kind of... What is socialist revolution, according to Marx? We will go through Marx a little bit. That the major goal of socialism is to eliminate private property. So private property was considered by Marx to be theft, to be a means of exploiting other men. So bourgeoisie will fight back. I mean, the owners of property will be fighting back. And so because of that, it's inevitable that the blood should be spilled. A dictatorship of the proletariat, which would be established by this revolution, will follow to weed out remaining capitalist elements. That's kind of a great design. What is communism? Communism is in 400 or 500 years, there will be a classless society. People will choose everything. There will be no money. There will be huge warehouses like Costco, Sam's Clubs, but with no money, no cashiers, you just go and help yourself with anything you like, And you work for that. Again, you work selflessly, not for money, not for anything else. And you will never take more. You will never take more than you really need. So that's the utopia. That's, I think it's worth reading. So I would say that it is nothing but secular religion. It's a religious faith, because look, this is heaven on earth, right? In communist society, nobody has one exclusive sphere of activity, but each can become accomplished in any branch he wishes. To hunt in the morning, fish in the afternoon, rear cattle in the evening, criticize after dinner, without ever becoming hunter, fisherman, herdsman, or critic. That would be this man of tomorrow, according to Karl Marx. And you can see why these ideas can be attractive. You can see why these ideas would be picked up, especially by intellectuals. Why intellectuals love socialism? Why so many intellectuals are Marxists? Because it gives them a claim to power, that they know more, they are more educated than everybody else. And so they should run the world. They know better what should be done, who should live, who should die, and what kind of new men of tomorrow we will have. So his ideas were first implemented by Lenin. Vladimir Lenin was the founder of the first socialist state, the Soviet Union. Lenin was pretty unscrupulous. I'm working right now at the Library of Congress quite a lot on something called Volkogonov Archives. It's a very interesting kind of story of Dmitry Volkogonov, who was a full general of the Soviet Army, and he was member of the Central Committee of the Party, and was one of the most kind of visible propaganda people in the Soviet Union. When he would show up on TV, I would switch it off right away, because I just could not stand his lies. But interestingly enough, that since 1980, he was secretly making copies of everything going through his desk. And today, there in the Library of Congress, when Soviet Union collapsed, he became National Security Advisor to Yeltsin. Approached U.S. Ambassador in Moscow. U.S. Ambassador said, well, what if we'll move all these archives, 46 huge boxes of secret correspondence of Lenin, Stalin, Trotsky, Dzerzhinsky, Khrushchev, Gorbachev, and U.S. Ambassador said, well, what if we'll move that to the CIA? And General Volkogonov said, no, CIA, Library of Congress. If CIA guys want to read that, let them get a reader's card and go there. And it's such a wealth of materials, nobody knows about it. It's not sorted even. It's kind of, I randomly look at it, and it's horrendous, horrific letters by Lenin. For example, Lenin received a letter from another party leader in the southern Russia. And in that letter, that party commissar is asking, dear comrade Lenin, you sent us a memo that we should fight religion. How can we fight religion? And Lenin is writing just on the bottom of the same page, dear comrade imbecile, kill religious people, that's how. And postscript, kill them the way that people will tremble 150 miles around. And they did. The argument was very simple of Lenin. The Marxist doctrine is omnipotent because it is true. So you can see it's based on faith. It's based on faith more than on anything else. That's another serial political killer, Leo Trotsky. He is all covered with blood and minced meat. This is the mega murderer. Under his auspices, more people were killed than by almost every other dictator of the world combined. That's it's funny enough, he looked like Borat in 1915. this is kind of a plump and joyful mass murderer, Nikita Khrushchev. On his watch, 7 million Ukrainians were starved to death in the dreadful winter of 1932-1933. 7 million people, all the food was confiscated from them, and they were starved to death to the point that that today Ukrainian people cannot still recover from that awful calamity. Khrushchev came to the United Nations, was banging his shoe on the podium, saying, "We will bury you. We will bury you." What he meant is that capitalism would be buried by socialism. Now his son, Sergei Khrushchev, defected to the United States and teaching in Brown University in Rhode Island. So his father probably is propelling in his coffin. Another kind of dictator, Leonid Brezhnev. Why I'm showing you this person? Because interestingly enough, he was so old and frail that he couldn't even walk or talk by himself. We call back in Soviet Union that period a reign of corpses, and reign of corpses in Kremlin. And the joke was that every working day would begin with resuscitation. So they would resuscitate him, and he would prop him up. So he would be like Weekend with Bernie kind of character. I think McCain made the point that if Alan Greenspan would die, he would still prop him up and pretend that he's alive, because he's such a great person, the great inflationist. The sad legacy of communism is right. So what I want to talk right now about is that most people in the West kind of do not know about horrendous crimes committed under the name of socialism. That socialism inevitably leads to mass murder. That people who were the members of the first Soviet government were also very nice people. They, for example, Lenin could play piano, could speak seven languages, Trotsky would write poetry in French. But the logic of this utopia, logic of this, of that system, which was a system of public slavery, nothing else, that made them mass murderers. Why would that be? Because socialism does not have any incentives to work, no incentives to do anything. So the only way to make people work is to shoot them. And they realized that in a very hard way in the 1920s, when Lenin was writing to Dzerzhinsky, first boss of VCK, that time it's KGB today, and he wrote to him, "Felix, I'm telling people what to do. They don't listen. What if we will take a couple of these absent-minded comrades and shoot them publicly?" And they did, and people began to listen. And so the only way to glue socialist system together is to shoot people, and to shoot as many as you wish. In 1930s, when they had the highest rates of economic growth, they were shooting more people than anybody else in human history, 10,000 to 12,000 a day, 10,000 to 12,000 a day. In the Soviet Union itself, they began with that was the first order of Lenin, to kill members of Tsar's family. These are Tsar's children. They were all murdered in this basement. So they began with murder, and justifying murder of children. In the course of the Soviet history, 11 million children were murdered by government. 11 million children. For what reason? Because Stalin used to say that apple doesn't fall far from the apple tree. So if you kill a father or you kill a mother, then probably children would not like you. And so his point is, why should we reform these people? Why it's easy to make new ones? Can you imagine? Kind of a horrific idea. And according to all kind of estimates, they murdered in the Soviet Union anywhere from 43 to 60 million people. Not many people in the West are aware of that. And I don't care even whether it's 43 or 60. Both numbers are completely horrific. Stalin used to say, death of one person is a tragedy. Death of millions is just statistics. It's just statistics. He used to solve all problems. He would say, Every problem has a man lurking behind it. No man, no problem. So that would be the death sentence. Ludwig von Mises, he talked about and wrote about two patterns of socialism. One is Russian pattern. It's purely bureaucratic. That means that the whole country is run like one huge post office. So it's something called command economy. It's not even an economic system. It's a simple system of management. People are being told what to do, and if they don't, they're being shot. They're shot, being sent to Siberia. So this is one system. Another system is, second system is German system. Under Nazism, another form of socialism is national socialism. If you remember that Hitler's party, the official name of that was National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany. So the only difference between him and Marx in their thinking, or Lenin, would be that he would combine socialism with racism together. He would think that people should be new people of tomorrow, should not only be enlightened, but they should look and act differently from people of today. And because of that, we should discard this racial trash, as Marx referred to in 1848. And sure enough, there were target groups, like Jews, Gypsies, and this is from a wonderful, this table is from a wonderful book called Death by Government. It's also, I would recommend you to read that. It's Rudy Rummel, a demographer from University of Hawaii. He just now retired. He made a list of databases. You can look at him on the Google. He has a wonderful website, democide.org. Look how many people were murdered by their own governments in the 20th century. He called them mortocracies. 76, 77, almost million in China, 61 million in the Soviet Union, in Germany, 21 million. So these are the most... this number of people murdered by socialists is about 170 million. It's several times more than 38 million people who were killed on the battlefield in the 20th century. 20th century was the bloodiest century in the history of human race. And 38 million people were murdered because of senseless wars in Europe. However, by Soviet Union alone, they murdered 60 million and 38 million. They just dwarfed all the battlefield. So Soviet Union is a perfect killer state. Perfect, according to Rudy Rummel, under Stalin, 43 million people were murdered. So 20% of the population. All socialists, not many people associate, say, Saddam Hussein of being a socialist, or Gaddafi, they are also socialists. And amazingly enough, that Saddam Hussein had, you wouldn't believe it, he had 16 kilometers of film tapes of Stalin. And his best pastime was to watch Stalin, to watch what he did and what not. He had a lot of pictures, and he looked even a little bit like him. He kind of had the same mustaches and whatnot. Then, communist China, the worst mega murderer. And kind of like to illustrate it with today's world, I think that the best inoculation against socialism would be, well, one is to watch Soviet story and to read history of real-world socialism. Another is to visit Cuba or North Korea. North Korea probably is far away and difficult to get into or get out of because they arrest a lot of people who are coming to visit. But Cuba is nearby, and you can see this, for example. This is a Cuban store. Cuban store. That's the result of socialism. Reminded me of Soviet store. In the Soviet Union, there was nothing to, can you imagine, 11 time zones, all natural resources possible and impossible. And people would have shortage of almost everything. There'd be no sausage, no soap, no nothing. So if we can come to that store. I was definitely, when I went to this Cuban store, I was definitely intrigued, what is that, this box is? What's in that box? That's something you can buy right away without rationing card. And this is baking soda. So there's probably nothing to bake with. And this is how Cuban cities look like right now. These are all people waiting for reception in the U.S. Embassy. They want to get out. This is Cuban real estate today. It's very sad to see that since 1959, they didn't have any money, didn't put any money in maintenance of buildings. We can see sometimes buildings, high-rises, without houses, because plumbing is not working. Can you imagine, you live on the seventh floor and you need to go, and you run down to the, in the middle of the night, to the outhouse, and the one outhouse was 26 for 26 people. Can you imagine? Made of, it's just a gruesome thing, yes. And it's a very nice and proud people, reduced by socialists to rubble, as well as their housing. And the last thing I want to say is that maybe you watched a movie by Michael Moore called The Sickle, about the glorious healthcare system in Cuba. And because I traveled to Cuba, I have some friends, Cuban friends that I made back in Moscow, because a lot of Cubans studied in Moscow, were brainwashed in Moscow. And I invited one of them to talk to my students. And one young student, she said, well, we see this disaster around, but how about healthcare? We heard that you have the best healthcare in the world. And he said, sure, we have the best healthcare in the world, but it would be much better if we would have medicines and we have ambulances and we would have clinics and hospitals. And this is an ambulance from Cuba. This person is driving his father to the hospice. This is a picture from Cuban hospital, given to me by a Cuban doctor. Can see this black spots are flies. There is a lot of others. I didn't put it here because just I didn't want to be too graphic before lunch. That's really, really very sad. So the lesson that we should learn from these millions of people who died is that when government is out of control, when government is too big, that's the only Marx I like. That's and I think he was pretty right. Yes, yes. And that's the most important for us, to keep in mind that freedom is a very rare and precious gift, that most people today in the world do not live under freedom. A lot of people still live under socialism. People in Cuba live under socialism. People in Cuba do not have health care, do not have housing, do not have rights, do not have property rights. Amazingly enough, Rodrigo, that friend of mine, when we were already finished this meeting and he speaks Russian, we were getting out of the audience, and he said, best healthcare in the world. He said, the only healthcare we have is to swim to Miami right away. There's no other healthcare possible. However, we should keep in mind that for themselves, they did good kind of healthcare. For the leaders, they would have a different type of healthcare. In the United States now, we face a lot of problems. The government is getting bigger and bigger and out of control. Inflation is looming, and socialists, amazingly enough, they hate gold. They hate precious metals, because if you have a gold standard, you cannot inflate, you cannot take power from the people. So gold standard is the only secure way to preserve people's wealth. And amazingly enough, one Chinese billionaire, if we can get, he read Lenin. Lenin wrote that in the future society, we will make toilet canoes out of gold, because that's what gold is for. Gold does not have any value, his point is. The only value of gold is to build toilet canoes. And this billionaire, he did that. And amazingly enough, the Chinese billionaire, who was communist in his youth, he made this at the cost of $7 million. Today, the cost of this is $32 million already. So some people would say, what an idiot. From another hand, he has a nice reply that that was the best investment probably he made, best investment he made. So we should, I have, I think, my email is there. If you would, I'm also on Facebook. I would be happy to send you this presentation and whatever materials you need, because it's very important for you to keep in mind that your future right now is being mortgaged by the government, because you do not vote. Your children and your grandchildren, amazingly enough, would be mortgaged, because there was a conference on the Fed about issuing 100 years maturity bonds. Can you imagine? Bonds with 100 years maturity. So that means that not only you will be paying back, but your children and children of your children. So that's the federal government now still saying, well, we're kind of still thinking about that. It's pushed by Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, they want to issue these bonds, to sell them, to get rich again at the expense of the United States taxpayers. So I think I've kind of depressed you enough before. I know that I'm not last, I think. One before last obstacle between you and lunch. So I would like to thank you so much for coming here, and definitely it's enjoyable to see so many young people interested in economics, in liberty, in free markets, and free minds. That's very, very, very nice. Thank you.